I'm Mike Breen, Public Awareness Officer for the American Mathematical Society, and I'm talking with David Neelan, Professor of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences, Institute of Geophysics and Planetary Physics at UCLA, the University of California at Los Angeles. And David, we'll start off part two talking about the complexity of modeling the climate.
It's an enormous task. There are thousands of climate scientists all over the world working on this. And some of it goes fairly well. Some things are easier to predict than others. And then as you get into these chains of feedbacks and a number of issues having to do with you can't possibly resolve every detail of the climate system, there are some things that are very challenging and absorb a lot of our energy trying to fix problems with in the model. And when I say resolve, it's similar to resolution on a camera. If you think about dividing the Earth into 10 million boxes, that's only going to get you a picture of the Earth that's order of, say, 100 kilometers by 100 kilometers or 50 kilometers by 50 kilometers would be the highest typical resolution for a climate model. As we worry more and more about subtle effects like these interactions involving convection, you would like to be able to have much higher resolution, that is to say, finer pixels, smaller grid boxes, but that's limited by the computational power we have available. So we have to develop tricks to bridge that gap between the details that we would like to be including in the climate system and what we can pragmatically include.
Is there anything you'd like to add?
Now, one of the things that's of interest is figuring out how to use the things that we study for natural climate variability, such as El Niño, for instance, and how that can apply to problems such as global warming. For instance, we know that when we're making predictions of El Niño, getting the temperature over a broad region in the eastern Pacific, making predictions of that, is considerably easier than making predictions of the rainfall for specific regions that are affected by El Niño. So, for instance, Southern California, there's an increased chance of rainfall during El Niño, but this is only a statistical effect. That is to say, if you know there's an El Niño, that means, for instance, that you have a 50% chance rather than a 33% chance of having an amount of rainfall equal or greater to the amount that takes to count you in the upper third of all rainy winters. So you're talking about an increase in probability. How can you use validation on El Niño to help say whether your models are doing sufficiently well on rainfall changes that you would trust them predicting something that's coming in future decades, such as global warming? One of the reasons that rainfall can be particularly challenging is because it involves very small scales. The scales of individual clouds going up have an enormous impact, of course, on the amount of rainfall that you get. And yet you can only afford, when you're running a climate model for a century or more, to have, say, a 50 kilometer by 50 kilometer grid as a relatively small size used in current models. That's much bigger than an individual cloud, which is a kilometer or a few kilometers on a side. So you have to search mathematically for relationships between the large-scale fields, like the moisture and the temperature, and the typical amount of rain and the typical amount of heat release that that rain produces into your atmospheric column, and put those relationships into your computer model of the climate system. And so you can chat with physicists and applied mathematicians looking for better ways of developing relationships between a large number of small things, in our case clouds, and the large-scale things. For instance, in statistical physics, you quite commonly deal with, say, a bunch of atoms whose spins are flipping to create a magnetic field, and there's a lot of mathematical tools for dealing with the way a lot of interacting small things, and in that case atoms, in our case clouds, act together to produce a large-scale effect, like a large-scale rain system. So you can try and make use of these tools developed, mathematical tools developed in the other fields to improve your climate models. And then the exercise of making forecasts on, you know, year after year for something like El Niño gives you a validation to tell you how well your model is doing. Now, of course, that being said, there are a number of differences between predicting things in interannual variability and predicting things for global warming, the interannual variability, for instance, associated with El Nino, that's one of the leading examples. Your prediction depends on knowing what the current conditions are. As I mentioned, if you have changes subsurface in the Pacific Ocean, you can track those changes as they evolve in your computer model and run them forward in time for several months and see what they'll do to the sea surface temperature and how that will affect the winds and the clouds and so on. That's a somewhat different source of predictability than knowing or having a guess about what humans are going to do in terms of the amount of additional greenhouse gases that they put in the atmosphere that causes a warming tendency in the atmosphere. That's a very widespread effect, and of course it's going to have cause changes in terms of temperature in a very widespread manner over the globe, whereas the changes in precipitation will come quite locally out of the effects of moving a storm track or shifting a strong convection zone in the tropics, convection being the process that produces rainfall, small overturning motions involved in clouds. You'll get very local effects by shifting these features of strong rain as you influence the temperature over a very broad region. It's a somewhat different problem than the problem of year-to-year predictability. Still, there's enough similarities in many of the processes going on, like the basic processes producing rainfall, that you can use what we know about the year-to-year changes in climate to help guide the model development to produce more accurate predictions for what we're likely to experience in the coming century as the planet warms.
That's David Neelan, Professor of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences and the Institute of Geophysics and Planetary Physics at UCLA, University of California, Los Angeles. David, thanks very much.
A pleasure talking to you.